Good afternoon, everybody. Joe Boma here on behalf of the Tacoma Historical Society. I'm here with my special guest today, Mr. Blake Serena, the Executive Director of the Exercise Science Center and also a Faircrest resident since 1987, I believe you said it was. How are you doing today, sir?
Doing fine. Thanks for having me. Oh,
thank you. Thank you for joining me. Now, today, our topic is, you guys may have guessed based on the town introduction, the city of Faircrest. Yes, Tacoma's little neighbor just to the west there on the peninsula. How do you like the town, sir? How are you enjoying it?
It was a really good fit for me. I love the relationships you have with the community here, and it's very rare that you get that today. That
yes.
Everybody in one town kind of banded together, and I think it's really helped a lot. We were kind of genetically created that way, and with the social media today, it's so easy for everybody to keep in contact with each other.
Yeah.
So I think we did a lot of things right early on, and we've kind of grown into kind of the modern technology, and it's really helped us.
That's awesome. You kind of started alluding to it. How did Faircrest come to be? Was it just one day you guys decided, you know, independence from Tacoma, or, you know?
Well, it kind of started with a fellow named Major Edward Bowes.
Okay.
And Major Bowes was in San Francisco when the earthquake hit.
Oh, wow.
And he and a group of land developers were kind of buying up property very quickly down there when everything was devastated, and kind of made their fortune and became land developers. And they came to Washington and wanted to buy some land. With Tacoma at that time, they were trying to make the city as a pre-planned community.
Okay.
And at that point, 1873, they hired Frederick Law Olmsted, kind of the world's greatest landscape architect, who designed New York Central Park. And he had recently designed the very first pre-planned community in the United States of Riverside, Illinois.
Oh.
And they hired him to make a showcase city of Tacoma. And he made this kind of really cool plan. It was called the Peach Basket Plan because rather than the typical grid setup like the Melbourne, Australia one that everybody used to use, he had curved streets that merged into each other because he thought, well, if we have the contours of the land that the streets would follow, it would make it look more natural. And he also didn't like the intersections because it kind of clogged everything up, and that's where all the dirt and stuff was and the mud. And so he had curved streets that kind of merged into themselves, so there's numerous pathways through town, and he had dedicated parkland, something very unusual in that time.
Something
and
needed.
And he submitted the plan, and it came on Christmas Day of 1873, and the people in Tacoma were just shocked, and kind of, it was really neat, but they just weren't quite ready. They just wanted to get a street. They just wanted sidewalks. And, well, it didn't go. And Faircrest kind of did what Tacoma tried to do. We ended up kind of going that route. And when Major Bowes took the streetcar, which, by the way, in 1891, they built a streetcar line that went from downtown Tacoma to Steilacoom. And it was the longest streetcar line in the nation. It was the first interurban streetcar line in the United States. This is, you know, 1891. This is really early.
I wish we still had that.
Yeah, me too. And we were probably the only vacant hunk of land left. And Major Bowes bought it, Faircrest. So we were right on the streetcar line. And he developed the town in 1907.
Mm-hmm.
And he needed someone to build this dream he had of this America Beautiful movement they had back then that Olmsted had started.
Yeah.
And they had just finished that University of Washington campus for the Alaskan Yukon Exposition. And the Olmsteds did that also. And they thought, you know, this is just kind of the big thing. And we're going to design a pre-planned community. So they built every street, sidewalk, everything was built, all the infrastructure before a house was even built.
Oh, wow. And to cut in there, the Olmsteds, is that the Olmsted family that does the Olmsted scholarships and all the big research
same one
today?
Right.
Okay.
Same.
So, you know, just a minor name in world development.
Yeah, just a minor. And what was kind of neat is the guy who started University Place next door wanted to put a university over there, Methodist University.
Mm-hmm.
And he came up with a good plan, and it was just about ready to go. And the Depression hit in 1893, and it kind of fell apart.
Yeah.
And he went up to, it didn't go. And his son worked with the guys who developed Tacoma's Wrights Park,
mm-hmm.
and they built Bird Lake, this man-made lake. And he learned how to do this with the architect that was hired, the landscape architect that Tacoma hired to build Wright's Park. And he learned all of those skills working under this guy. And he became a landscape architect. And his son, who was very much into the Olmsted thing, went to Stanford University that Olmsted had just designed. And he was the first class. He actually graduated with Hoover Gruber, who was the president then, or an early president. So anyway, he went through that program, and Major Bowes contacted his father in University Place and basically kind of said, you know, hey, you know, we do you have somebody in mind that we could use? And they ended up hiring his son. And his son built a lake for us called Spring Lake right in town, and he built it as a pre-planned community and learning a lot of the skills he learned by making Wright's Park. And he built this community for us. Like I say, everything was pre-planned. And the idea was to get people out of their homes and get them communicating with each other and have places in town where they could meet, parks and places to kind of do that. And all the streets were very wide boulevards, and they kind of followed, again, the contours of the land. And he wanted the streets lower than the lawns and the estates so that that nature overshadowed what we were trying to do in the urban planning. And it worked. It just kind of worked.
Yeah, that sounds lovely.
And Major Bowes later became the star of a radio program called The Amateur Hour. And in the 30s, he progressed and started the first. And he's the one who discovered Frank Sinatra. He discovered Beverly Sills, the opera singer. He actually had Gladys Knight on his show when she was 7 years old and discovered her, and he became famous. He married a very famous screen star named Margaret Illington, and they actually had the Illington Hotel attached to the Pantages. That was named after his wife. Yeah. And Ed Sullivan took over his show, and actually after his show was Ted Mack and then Ed Sullivan. So he started the Amateur Hours and all of that stuff, too. That was the founder of our town.
Well, this radio show is definitely a bit more successful than mine was out of Colorado Springs.
We used to live in Colorado Springs. So I think there was a couple of things that were interesting about that. First of all, we were a pre-planned community, and there just wasn't very many of those in the country. We had Riverside, Illinois, and I really don't know of very many more. Longview was a pre-planned community, but that was probably a good 15 years after we did planned our city. The other one was the streetcar line was really crucial. Yeah. And we had the very first interurban streetcar line in the U.S., and two of our borders were on that streetcar line. So that's a pretty neat part of our history that we have that kind of stuff going on.
Yeah, so just all these little nuances and firsts that people don't really think of that kind of led to, you know, modern public transit and modern urban design just...
Yeah. I think it's kind of funny because people are going the route of the planning that we did back then. Now people are doing it now. You know, they're building these parkways and they're building, you know, parks and different things there. Well, that was in our DNA from day one.
Only took a century to catch up.
We had a resident in our town. She was very well known, and she headed our historical group that we have in town. It's called the Fircrest Civic and Heritage Association. Her name was Sally York. And Sally got me started on the history stuff, and we became very close friends. And she was telling me the story of growing up back east, and she had to move out here, and she looked all over for a place to live. And she went to Kent and Seattle and Bellevue, and she said that the minute I pulled into Fircrest, I just went, oh my gosh, this just feels like home. And she ended up buying a home here in town. And she's telling me this story, and I'm going like, wow, that's really cool. And she says, and I said, well, where were you from originally? She goes, Riverside, Illinois. And I said, Riverside, did you know that was the first pre-planned community in the United States by Olmsted, and that we're in Olmsted City, the only other one in the country? And she said, no. And I go, well, that's why it felt like home. It's the other city.
The same, police station was in the same spot, town hall. It all made sense.
Yeah, and it was really pretty... pretty bizarre for her to realize that and not even know. So that there is something to it. It definitely has a feel. Fircrest in the 1960s had the highest per capita income for the Parks Department of any city in the state. And so we recognized the importance of our park system and our parks. And we did have quite a few. At one time, I think we had 44 acres of parkland in a little community of about 6,500 people.
Yeah, I was going to say for a town, you know, with borders like this, 44 acres is tough to find.
To keep up. There's a lot of what we call natural parks. And those natural parks is a code word for parks we don't have the money to maintain, so we just call them natural parks. But it was really pretty fortunate for me to move into a town that had such a strong community feel.
Definitely.
And such a support for the Parks Department and health and recycling, this type of thing, because the whole America Beautiful movement was about nature and about the importance that kind of evolved in the recycling thing that we did.
Yeah.
Major Bowes wanted this community to be beautiful, and he built a big lake right in the middle of town, and everybody was within 1 mile of that lake, and they had gazebos and places where they could meet. And it was a man-made lake called Spring Lake. Ended up, the coliform counts got very high with sewage getting in there, and it was actually condemned in 1941 by a Dr. Nace here in town. But we were able to fill it in later and kind of make it into a park, and that's the main park of our city.
That's good.
Because we always had that lake, very early the citizens said, you know, we want a swimming pool, because that was a large part of our history. And we had a kind of a cement pool that progressed into a very large swimming facility in 1960 they built. And we just finished our third pool in our town, which, it was, I guess, really fortunate that our public understands the importance of having that as a gathering place for our city. And Major Bowes himself bought the first 9 holes of the Firrcrest Golf Course and donated that to the city so that it would stay as a natural park and kind of a park-like atmosphere. So he really did think well above his years, I guess, of what was going to happen 100 years down the road.
No, that is incredible that the planet had that much forethought and that much, you know, drive to help the community to build that honestly healthy modern community at that time that's carried over to today. Kind of along that same lines, it's been about 100 years. Are you guys planning? Do you know of any plans for the 100th anniversary party?
You know, I'm sure the town 1925? Is getting some stuff together. I mean, I'm trying to gather some stuff together to at least be a little ready, but that is a really big deal for us, is our 100th year anniversary. We have some outstanding people in our community. We have a mayor, David Villafor, who probably served as our mayor for 25 of those 100 years.
So, oh, wow.
a very big impact with Dave, and I think he's going to be someone we're going to rely on, I guess, to kind of tell the history and the vision of the city, because I think he was pretty instrumental in our history. A lot of our older people that started when I came into town have since passed, so we did have some interviews of some of those people that we have. We have a pretty good pictorial library that we're now cataloging, or I've been working on that for a while. So hopefully we'll have some resources available when the newspapers start calling and saying, you know, we want to run a story on it. So that should be pretty good for us too. But I think it's going to be a really neat thing for us to have that ability to showcase kind of what the city is all about and what we've done.
That's awesome. And you kind of alluded to one of my favorite parts of moving up here, because as my guests and you know, I was born in Boston, you know, nice 400-year history, but moving out here, it's about 100-year history. I'm like, oh yeah, we're having our mayor help us. He's been mayor for, you know, over a quarter of the town's existence. Like, you can't get that back.
No, you don't get that.
It's awesome that you have so many just first-person direct connections out here with your history, and you feel, you know, kind of one with it. I enjoy that as a historian.
You know, I think one thing that can kind of give you an idea of the way the mindset of the town is we had a recreation center for many years. It was very well used. It was kind of very well used up. And our pool was leaking, and we had to make a choice. Are we going to build a new community center? And again, the DNA of our town was about parks, and it was about inclusion and community. And we actually sent out some surveys and talked to the residents, and they said how important it was to have that, those parks, and for their kids and growing up and building these kind of community standards that we wanted our kids to have. You know, we wanted to, you know, teach every kid to swim. You know, that's an important life skill. So we actually asked the voters to consider building a new recreation center and a swimming pool. And with a town of, at that time, about 65 to 6,900 people, that's a pretty big ask. And when we overwhelmingly saw that they were in support of it, we started going out and determining what the cost would be, and it was a lot more than we thought. It was $18.5 million
oh, wow.
to have a swimming pool and a recreation center built.
Yeah.
And that was an insurmountable amount of money, and it passed 80%. And that is a 80%, that's a really large margin of victory of yes on the bond vote. Well, after the bond vote, we started soliciting some donations to offset that cost. And in a very short amount of time, we came up with $10.5 million.
Wow.
$10 to $10.5 million to offset the cost
that's
that
awesome.
Everybody agreed. You know, we're going to go with, you know, $18.5 million. Well, gee, all of a sudden it's down to $8 million, you know, and virtually overnight. So the public and then we thought, gosh, this is going to be such a beautiful facility. We want to make sure in the future we can take care of this facility. Mm-hmm. So we had a group of citizens that got together again, and we started a Fircrest Park and Recreation Foundation where we get donations. And we'll take the money that we get from the interest, and we'll pay for park enhancements and programming.
Okay.
And in the first 2.5 months, we have about $280,000 in that account.
Oh, wow.
And we just started. And
that's incredible.
I think our goal for, I know personally, I'm thinking if we can get to $5 million, that would be $1,000 a day. We can provide the kids in our community, those 200 so kids every day in the summer, $1,000 a day for the rest of their lives. And never touch the principal. It'll just be one day, hey, let's take you all to the baseball game at Cheney Stadium, and we'll pay for your hot dog and Coke. Next day, we'll buy you all the brand new uniforms for your soccer team. Next day, we'll buy you all brand new basketball. Next day, and never touch the principal.
That would be incredible.
That's an incredible thing. And I think the town itself kind of saw that, you know, the banks make a lot of money on these big loans and bonds, and, you know, they're getting the interest. And why are we giving the banks so much of our interest money?
Yeah.
We can do it ourselves. We'll fund ourselves, and we'll do this and do it right and keep all the money in the community. And that realization hit, and I mean, it just worked to a T. So it was just kind of exciting to see that.
Yeah, definitely. I'm glad to hear that you guys are still that forward thinking, and just to hear that a city cares that much about its kids. I mean, growing up, they've been like, oh, we don't have a pool, go swim in the bay. It's like, but there's orcas in the bay. Swim faster, problem solved.
Yeah, well, I'm a racing team. So, you know, we do like to brag about Fircrest that we have the most national champions per capita of any city.
Really?
Yes, in sports. So we have a very loaded amount of people here. And, you know, some of our people that we have a fellow named Gordy Pfeiffer who still lives in town. I think he had 9 national titles in handball. He was literally the best handball player in the country for years.
Mm-hmm.
We have Sam Baker, who was the second in all-time NFL history in scoring. He had the second most points of any. I mean, who knows that in a town like this?
I would have never guessed that in a town like this.
We had a player here who played, was one of the last players to play both offense and defense in the NFL. And he was the second highest paid player in pro football in 1953 and an all-pro for the St. Louis Cardinals named Don Paul.
Okay.
We had, I think we found 17 national champions in our city so far.
Wow.
In a little town like ours. So I think the sports thing is kind of a big thing for us, too.
Yeah, that's incredible.
And I think because of the original vision of the town and the whole tie with nature and community, and we led the county in recycling with our town, so we've done some things that way. That, and again, these weren't by accident. This was made, you know, kind of from the DNA of our city. This is the way it was planned to be. We do have the Quonset cherry tree as our official tree. We have 115 of them planted along our main boulevard.
Late spring, early summer.
Oh,
beautiful.
Man, it's beautiful. Yeah, it really is. So, and if you're crossing from Tacoma in Cross Orchard, which is the border of our town, you'll notice all of the streets are alphabetical. They go down to the letters. A lot of people don't know that. But and these were named after counties in California where Major Bowes was from.
Okay.
And our side streets are named after Ivy League colleges. So we have Harvard and Yale and Vassar. And education was a very big part of our city's kind of identity because we, again, were developed by the son of the guy who started University Place. And the name of our city was Regent's Park until it became incorporated in 1925. And then we changed it to Fircrest. Fircrest is actually named after the golf course. The golf course was built 2 years before the town, and it was called the Fircrest Golf Course. But
Just slid that name right up. Absolutely. Easy fix.
And it was kind of interesting that our school, our elementary school, Wainwright, in 1925, the building was built, and it was a very square, very academic looking elementary school, brick, just very plain. And we decided, you know, we want that building to look like an Ivy League college because, again, that's all of our side streets that ran into that street were Ivy League colleges. So we had porticos built, and we had a company called Sterrell Hansen from University of Washington that helped build a lot of those buildings there. Yeah. Remember the UConn Exposition that the Olmsted family built there? Well, we had some of the original architects working on those buildings come to our town and rebuild that school to make it look like an Ivy League college. And one of our residents was actually of the Sterrell Hansen Construction Company. He was the Hansen who worked on that building, and he just recently passed away. His name was Phil Hansen. And he told me how important it was for our identity of our school. Frankly, I was a little disappointed that the city of Tacoma built a new elementary school, tore it down, and built something that doesn't look anything like an Ivy League school. And that was a little troubling because it's going to be 50 years before we get another building that could tie in that way.
That's awesome. You've mentioned City of Champions and a few town firsts. Is there any other notable history or stories that stands out? Or?
Well, you know, we have some, what do we call them? Myths? Legends?
Okay. The legends of Faircrest. Okay.
There's some good ones. We have a little lake across the street from our city called China Lake.
Yep.
And in the 1920s and 30s, the kids in town found a tunnel that started at the little swampy lake there, and it was pretty long. It was about 150 feet long, and they would crawl into this tunnel, and it emptied into a room that was about 9 by 12 feet.
Okay.
It had very smooth walls, and there was a lot of written stories about broken dishes and strings and candles and things in there where I guess kids would go down there and play. Yeah. And it was right under our current street of Regents Boulevard.
Okay.
And the kids, the dare was to be in the tunnel when the streetcar went over your head. And I even had one resident in town said he remembered as a kid, if you jumped up and down or stomped on the street, you could hear the dirt clods landing on the in the tunnel. There's been a lot of speculation on these tunnels. There was a young man in 1930 that fell into a well. He was 10 years old, and he said he fell into a giant tunnel. And this was on the corner of El Dorado and 19th. And they were able to rescue him, and they found this large tunnel. And later on, doing some of the work in our town in the sewers, they ran into that tunnel. And it was kind of an amazing deal. It went actually pretty far. So it turned out we had a very industrious and innovative mayor named Dex Silver. And Tacoma contacted Faircrest and said, we would like to put a big sewer main, 4.5 foot pipe right down the middle of your city so we can get our sewage and waste to our facility, and it would be very expensive to have to route around your city. Would you allow us to do that? And he said, well, why would we want you to tear up our streets and put your pipe in here? And he said, well, we will give you a really good sewer rate for your residents if you let us do it. And he said, you know, that's a really good rate. Okay, we'll do it. So they're digging this big trench to build this in, and they ran into that tunnel. And it was able to save them a lot of time. They just laid the pipe through the tunnel. Well, I guess when they were hauling out the first load of dirt in this big tunnel they were building, Dex was waiting for him at the exit of the town and said, hey, 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 he flags down the truck. What are you doing with that dirt? He said, well, we're dumping it. Yeah. And he said, well, that's not your dirt. That's Faircrest dirt. That's our property. You put it over there at the Spring Lake. And that's how we filled in the Spring Lake that we had to condemn. And Dex got the city of Tacoma not only to give us a good sewer rate, but he dumped all the dirt from the sewer project, and that's what filled up our lake and made our ball fields and all that type of thing. So
there you go. So where'd the tunnels come from, though?
There's a couple of theories. One of them was, you know, in 1885, they ran the Chinese out of town.
Yeah.
And my thought is that they had to get out of Dodge.
Yes.
And I think some of them came here because in this lake there was fresh water. It was kind of outside of the boundaries of the city, and they thought maybe we could just hide here and we'll live here for a while. And I think they had to build a hiding place. That was my thought. Now, there's been other theories that it was a kind of a drainage thing situation for some swampy area there. The thing I think that was kind of significant in about 1950s, they were dredging the China Lake and they came across a very large rock. And this rock had just all these fossils and bones and just crazy stuff in it. It was just loaded full of them. And the Holroyd plant down in South Tacoma, I think it was Holroyd or one of the places that did that work, saw that rock and took it out and took it over to their plant and left it right in front of the plant as you entered. And later on, the parks director at the city of Tacoma, I believe his name was Butler, Bob Butler, saw that rock and said, you know, I'd really like to buy that if I could.
Yeah.
And he bought the rock and he had some archaeologists come down from University of Washington and they looked at it and said, this appears to be like a garbage dump at China Lake where they found it, where people would throw their bones and things that they would eat and maybe hunting parties or maybe even these Chinese. And it solidified and it made this big rock. And he had that rock in his backyard. And later he sold the house to, I believe it was a gentleman, and he didn't know what the rock was, the fossil rock, and he painted it white and it's in his backyard and I'm trying to find it and maybe we can clean it up and we have a really nice traffic circle right across the street. And wouldn't that be a cool thing to put in this traffic circle, this fossil rock and say this is, you know, where maybe the Native Americans would camp here and eat, and this was the remains of what they ate.
Let the archaeologists and historians dig through it and just see what we can find in it. That'd be awesome.
So, you know, I think another really fun thing, I've been on city council a couple times, and University Place became a city in 1995, and I was elected to council in 96, so I got a chance to work with the people in University Place, the original council, and it was such an exciting time to have that development come right on our border and to work with that city. And they did such a wonderful job, that original council. I was just very impressed with all the work they did and what they were accomplishing. And I think that our histories are so linked, you know, between the two cities. I just think that was pretty neat. I think one interesting story about that link is the Weyerhaeuser family was going to build the national headquarters in Faircrest.
Oh, wow.
And they bought the land that TCC sits on today.
Mm-hmm.
And when they actually asked the city to annex them, because they needed sewer service, they needed electrical, you know, power, they needed all these
amenities.
And they said, will you annex us into the city of Faircrest? Because it was pretty remote in 1949. There was a big gap between Tacoma and... So we were the logical choice, and we took a vote and said, you know, we don't want you. Now, that was pretty heartbreaking because life would have been a lot different in Faircrest. I'm not saying it'd be better or worse, but it would have been a lot different with Weyerhaeuser there in our town. So as they moved to Federal Way and built their headquarters, there was a big hunk of land there. And Tony Shelton, one of our residents who was with Tacoma Schools, knew the Weyerhaeuser, said, what are you going to do with that big hunk of land you got out there? And they said, well, I don't know, what do you think? He goes, I think you should give something back to the community. Let's build a college. And he said, no, that's a great idea. And him being an educator, he put him in charge of a little committee, and they put together this plan to build this new college there. And there's only one person on that original committee still alive in our town. His name is Touchdown Tommy Baker. And Tommy was in that group. Mm-hmm. And right directly across the street, we had the airport, and they were going to fly in their buyers from all over the world, and they would be able to, and, you know, of course, now this whole plan went south, so they ended up, the airport was called the Oswald Airport, and the planes took off. They started at our, kind of by a post office, and they took off right at where our McDonald's is now, directly over the middle of the college campus. The planes went directly over the college.
That must be cool.
They had to build all the buildings one story high so that no one would hit. So all the buildings at TCC were set up at one story. And they were building the buildings, and they were just going to the printers to get the stationery, and they had to come up with a name for the college, and they were going to call it the John F. Kennedy Community College.
Mm-hmm.
This was 1965, 2 years after Kennedy was assassinated, and they thought it's a great idea. Well, they started going out to bid for the signage and for the stationery, and somebody stopped for a second and said, wait a minute, I just thought of something. They said, what? And he goes, you think there's a problem with the Oswald Airport directly across the street from John F. Kennedy Community College? And they all looked at each other and said, Let's call it Tacoma Community College. Okay, here. That's how it happened. So kind of a sad story.
But
yeah, but it did impact the city rather, you know, markedly to have the Weyerhaeuser family put that there. But
yeah,
kind of a neat one.
Yeah.
And I think maybe just one more added anecdotal story I thought was pretty interesting is Major Bowes was very tied into the city of Tacoma, too, and he built a beautiful building on about, I think it's like 9th and, it's between like Pacific and A Street. Beautiful building. It's still there. And, of course, Margaret Illington, his wife, he built a hotel in her name next to the Vantages, and he was very big about the streetcar lines and some of those things. But Major Bowes went to Europe and bought a bunch of art and sculptures and brought them back to Tacoma. And among those purchases, he bought these two big lions that he put on the Division side of Wrights Park, not the 6th Avenue one where the Brussels lions are with the big manes, but they were Sphinx-type lions that he had and bought. And he put them on the Division side next to Annie and Fanny, the two dancing maidens that they have there now. And they pushed those back a little bit to make room for these big lions. And they were made out of by the Borglins, who carved Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
And they actually, I guess, had made these lions, and they were supposedly out of a material that was stronger than granite or something. Well, turned out when it rained, the rain started dissolving these sculptures, and he had to remove them. And he felt kind of bad, but he was building the city of Faircrest, and he said, I'll move them there. So he built these huge pedestals right at the entrance of our park, and he put these lions in that were said to be as big as boxcars. They were just very large, and there's never been a really good, clear picture of them.
Yeah.
And at one point, there was never a picture at all. There was an artist's rendition of them in the Tacoma newspaper from back at that time, but there was no photographs. And I was able to find the photograph of the lions, and they were only there for a couple of years, and either they were destroyed or maybe vandalized, we're not sure. The pedestal stood there for many years, but the lions did not. But it was just kind of a neat thing that we ended up with these giant lions.
Yeah.
And some of the old timers, when I first came into town, said, I remember those lions. And like I say, that the line was they were as big as boxcars. They were huge. So that's kind of neat. You know,
yeah, definitely.
Have something like that in our city.
A little tie to Mount Rushmore, too, and, you know, Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
Keeping the world in this line.
You know, Borglin built the mile markers for that first interurban streetcar line that went from Tacoma, and there were little mile markers.
Yeah.
Some of those were still in existence, and one of the council members at University Place, husband, studied that and said there's still some of those out there in the woods that people haven't found yet, probably, he thinks.
Yeah.
So I thought, man, that'd be a really cool thing to find.
Fun little conversation piece in the backyard.
it was interesting that we had the Chambers Bay Golf. The Chambers Bay Golf Course was on the original line of that first streetcar line from downtown Tacoma to Steilacoom.
Yeah.
And it went through all those cities on the way. And I thought, man, wouldn't it be really neat if we had all those hotels in downtown Tacoma, we put them on streetcars or buses that look like streetcars and haul them on the original course and take them to the golf thing and then maybe go down to Steilacoom and across the island. So Mrs. Transu, I'm trying to remember what her first name was, but she was head of the Pierce County Transportation, and we discussed this in depth about using that as another avenue to get the people from the hotels, and it was just kind of neat that it was on the same course. So we met with the mayors of University Place and Steilacoom and even Anderson Island, some of those out there, and Faircrest, and we said, you know, let's look at this as a possibility, and we got the specs on these energy-efficient buses that look like streetcars, and son of a gun, was probably 2 years later, here's some streetcars that and Gig Harbor ended up buying them.
Some
streetcars there. And,
yes, yeah.
And it just came as an idea, and it's so cool that 2 years later, you're looking, and there's streetcars coming down 19th, and
that's awesome.
Was kind of exciting. Yeah, it really was.
Glad it worked out for you.
Yeah, and you know, the town is small enough that, you know, a couple of excited people can come up with an idea, and they can make it happen, and that's what's so exciting about this town, you know, that it's hard to do that in other cities, but you know, we've had a council that's been very proactive. They do a lot of things like that, and that's what makes it kind of exciting to live here. And again, it wasn't by accident. I think it was the town was created with that model, that everybody can walk the recreation center and the park that we have. It's all maybe a mile or so away. And so we're very big about the physical activity piece, the nature piece, all that. And I think that's really exciting that we have that ability in our town that was built for people to meet, you know, and to do that thing. And I think that's one of the reasons why all these things are falling into place now, because it was created that way originally. You know, it was in our DNA.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
So with all of, you know, these awesome building blocks, both historical and just community that you have, is there kind of a way ahead for the town that you foresee, or any, you know, big projects you can give us the skinny on?
You know, I think what's, of course, the community center is really large, and there's a lot of things coming in this new generation. I think we're starting to see the young people stepping up and getting power. You know, because power has always been notoriously done by what I would call the rich old white guys. And we're starting to see some of the young people.
Term.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the people that were in power, they were able to get things done. But there has to come a time where the new generation has to come in. And I think we're seeing that in a lot of different ways. We're seeing that we have a council member, I think, that began here as a teenager, and now she's probably been on for 10 years.
That's awesome.
And to get that type of insight of how people are thinking and how society is changing, and so there's a lot spoken about inclusivity and you know, some of those kind of things too, and I think that's is going to help us in the future, and I think we're very aware of that, and we're trying to figure out a way to get ahead of the curve and make sure that we're kind of the shining example of how it should be done. I think we're very fortunate that we're going to be able to get through a lot of this. A lot of people in our town are thinking, I want things the way they were. Well, that's not really realistic.
Yeah,
there's just too many things involved now. But but we've done so many things right. We've kept the streets in the same angles. We have the parks that are still such a large part of our town. We just had one of our park employees that took care of our park for literally half of the of the history of our park system. When we bought Spring Lake from the county and started that park, he has taken over and taken care of our parks for over half of the history of our town. And to have one person that, you know, his name was Andy Piercy, fantastic employee. We had him, we were so lucky, he just retired. So that's the end of that era, kind of, in some respects. But
seriously,
I'm excited to see what the young people are going to do in our city. I mean, I've seen so much passion with the kids, and they want to, I think they want to make a difference. And I think they don't feel like they have to make a difference in our town, but they want to get involved and put their fingerprint on this next generation. And I'm really excited to see what they're going to come up with. It's going to be pretty neat.
Well, you sold me on Faircrest, that's for sure.
Well, if you notice, the home prices are a little higher here than Washington. So I think if you go across 19th and maybe the Tacoma side, you're probably going to pay $40,000 to $50,000 less.
Yes, sir. Maybe one day. That was Blake Serena, the executive director of Exercise Science Center, and also, I would say, the resident historian of Faircrest, based on all the stories and knowledge
that
you brought with us. Unofficial. Unofficial, of course. But you're the city of champion. Just take the title. And thank you very much for your time today. I'm Joe Boma, and that was another Grit City story.